I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Podcast, where we will be discussing in all its gory details Ben Wheatley's adaptation of J.G. Ballard's High Rise. The film was released last weekend, and we've both seen it, and we've both got full pages of notes this week. Lots to talk about, lots to dive into. Hello from me, Sam Howlett, as always, and joined by Big H, Helen Seymour.
Hello.
Hello. Do you like Big H, or do you want to stop it?
No, that's all right.
Okay, I'm going to keep doing it then.
Okay.
So let's dive straight in, because this is quite a complex and layered film. Mm-hmm. So it's adapted from the J.G. Ballard novel, and it's about a affluent London-based high-rise apartment building, and essentially you have, as you get higher, they are more expensive, and the inhabitants are of a higher social class, so you've got essentially working class, middle class, and upper class. And I think that's kind of a very unsubtle social statement from there off. I think it's wearing its social commentary on its sleeve very proudly, and it's not like layered under subtext, it's just screaming it from the roof of the high rise of what this film is really saying. And eventually, this system in this high-rise eventually collapses and descends into just what can only be described as pure chaos and anarchy and man's primitive nature.
Like Lord of the Flies.
I was going to say, it's Lord of the Flies.
X-rated.
Yeah, X-rated Lord of the Flies in an apartment building. It's directed by Ben Wheatley. Now, Ben Wheatley is perhaps one of the most, I think he's one of the most interesting British filmmakers at the moment, if not international filmmakers at the moment. Every film he's done has been just absolutely hit the mark. Sort of a weird combination of dark humanity with humour and comedy as well.
Really dark humour.
Really dark, pitch black humour, yeah. But always very interesting. Let's talk about some of the characters that feature in the high-rise. I was going to say let's talk about the plot, but I think I've done it in one sentence,
yeah,
really, the plot. That's pretty much it.
It's simple in that way.
Yeah, there's not really a typical narrative structure to the film. I mean, it opens at the end, as films often do, and you see Dr. Lang, who's played by Tom Hiddleston, and the building is still there, but just it's all rubble on the inside, and it's dark and smoky, and there's dirt everywhere, and everything just looks like
chaos,
and it's not how it's supposed to be, so you know something's wrong from the off.
And that's gone over with a voiceover that says life in the high rise.
Yeah.
It's great for Lang, and he's really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So it's a nice juxtaposition.
Yeah. I was gonna say as well, actually, that the it's got a third person narration by Tom Hiddleston, which is immediately quite jarring, I think, that he's narrating about himself. And there is one point towards the end of the film where he actually says it out loud, his name in third person.
Yeah.
So he's completely lost his mind as well, along with the rest of the building. And he sort of says, oh, I'm talking to the building kind of thing. So
yeah.
The film's all about different kinds of collapse. Collapse of this society and then collapse of in the individual mind as well. But the film then, it goes back, I think it says 3 months earlier, doesn't it? And you see Dr. Robert Lang, is it Robert Lang?
Yes.
Robert Lang moving into the building. And from there, it's just a sort of slow build-up. He meets a lot of the tenants. There is a lot of actors and characters in the film. Lots to talk about there. And he just goes through and gradually there's tensions rise between the floors until eventually there's a war, a class war occurs. So let's talk about Tom Hiddleston, the star of the film. It's funny that he's now this huge sort of a one-man genre, I guess.
Yeah.
The Hiddleston. What did you make of him in this film?
I think he really suited the role.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Lang.
The sort of gentle middle class.
Yeah.
I think.
His whole body language and the way that he moved was very much kind of reserved.
Yeah.
And
rigid and...
And rigid and precise.
Yeah.
Which really suited the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And it was good to see that change throughout the
Definitely.
Film.
Definitely.
Kind of playing like a James Bond.
Kind of. Towards the beginning, yeah. Especially. Quite suave.
Polite,
wears
suave.
His suits.
Yeah.
But a little bit of a ladies' man.
Yeah.
I think as well, he's the mediator between the lower floors and the upper floors. But
yeah.
As well, he's also trying to slightly be a social climber as well, with retaining sympathy for the lower floors. Which I think is in itself a sort of quite political, social statement. Yeah, absolutely perfect cast from Tom Hiddleston. And as the character says, he's a fine specimen in this film.
Specimen is the right word.
Yeah. So also we have Luke Evans as a character called Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
Very appropriately called Wilder.
Yeah.
Because he is a wild man.
Crazy guy.
Yeah. He spends a lot of the film covered in blood.
Yeah. It's like a wolf.
Yeah, he does look very very feral. He really fits into this world. And he's from the lower floors. And he is kind of essentially the leader of this resistance against the upper floors, in a way.
He's also a documentary filmmaker.
Documentary filmmaker, yeah.
And
yeah,
he's
I thought,
obsessed with getting it on
yeah.
camera.
I thought Luke Evans was absolutely brilliant in this
me
film,
too.
Actually.
Yeah.
I think he was the standout. This is the standout performance, I think,
yeah.
for me. I mean, it's probably the showiest performance as well, because he's so loud and he's got a lot to do, but I really took him away from this. He stayed in my mind for quite a while, a lot of his scenes, and yeah, just this kind of man against the world character. Not always a nice character either. Quite often he does a lot of nefarious things, but you still kind of slightly sympathise for him and you kind of root for him to get to the top.
There's a key scene where he's shouting through a door and asking
yeah.
questions about what has happened. And at that point, you are on his side.
Mm.
And I think, in a way, at that moment, you're on his side more than you are on Lang's side.
Yeah.
Because Lang is so reserved, I found it difficult to connect with him.
I think I agree with you there. Because I think that's partially intentional as well,
yeah.
that Lang is... kind of a contradictory character in that he has sympathy for the lower floors and yet wants to be part of the upper floors as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a nice interesting performance there from Luke Evans. And then I think the third character that's important to talk about is Jeremy Irons as Anthony Royal, who is the architect of the building and the big cheese at the top. I also think it's his surname is Royal.
Yeah,
which
again,
yeah,
not too subtle there.
It's not subtle at all. It, and I like that, I think.
Oh, me too.
It knows what it's doing.
Especially
in
something like this, where there's
yeah.
moments where I don't really know what's going
yeah.
on. Because it can be quite surreal.
Definitely.
I think
yeah.
you have to have those pinpoints that are like, yeah.
Yeah, this is clearly that, and this
yeah.
is that. You know, yeah. I thought he was really good as well. I haven't seen Jeremy Irons in anything for a few years, anything this major. At the moment, he's also playing Alfred in the new Batman Superman film,
mm-hmm.
which is out this weekend, so he's kind of a slight resurgence for Jeremy Irons' love. But
kind of reminded me of Truman Show.
Very Truman Show,
yeah.
yeah. Ed Harris and Truman
yeah.
Show. Also, another Ed Harris character in a film called Snowpiercer. Ed Harris is kind of a very similar character. He's the head of this new... Whereas, because Snowpiercer is about the whole of humanity is on board a train after some sort of global event. And he's the head of, at the head of the train at the front. And that's kind of a similar structure where you've got... As you get further along, you get to the higher classes and he's on top. And
yeah.
I think... It, and that's the same in the Truman Show where he's kind of in charge of this mini society.
This architect.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Literally, yeah.
He calls himself the midwife
in the show. I think he had a quite a complex performance as well, because he wasn't just, rich, powerful, evil. He was quite contradictory at times with what he was saying and what he was doing. But always, he had a nice sort of vampiric performance as well, I thought.
He seemed to have his heart in the right place. Yeah. But that was the only thing that was in the right place.
Definitely, yeah.
All of his actions were against his proposed good intentions.
So, in terms of what you got from what the film was saying, because we said there the plot's very, very thin.
Yeah.
There's not like a, it's not like a chain of cause and cause and effect. There's not things like that. It's just things just happen. And I think what a lot of people might struggle with this film is the order things happen.
Yeah.
And it's like, but this things seemingly appear to take place at the same time and your time frame is completely thrown off. I think especially when it gets to about an hour in, it does away with structure.
It's just time.
And time, yeah. Things, it seems like things happen that happened far later in the film and vice versa. Yeah. Things feel like that happened earlier and characters appear to be in the same place, two places at once.
Absolutely.
It's very discombobulating. Well, I think that's really on purpose to really just push the idea that this building has completely fallen into chaos.
And again, like you said at the beginning, everything has collapsed.
Yeah, complete collapse of everything possible, yeah. So I think that it's interesting that the book by J.G. Ballard is set in the future.
Yes.
Whereas the film is set actually in the past, it seems.
Yes, because it keeps the 70s...
Yeah, sort of border of the 70s, 80s kind of era, book. Yeah.
Which is an interesting decision.
Yeah.
It's been applauded for doing that by lots of people. And I can see why, because to bring out a film about a dystopian future isn't
It's not that interesting anymore. Yeah.
So to set it in the past, but to be talking about things that are happening to us now, it, again, uses that collapse of time quite well.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a line in it that's something like, I feel like I'm living in a future 5 minutes from now. Or
definitely, it has that kind of vibe. I think there was a kind of sci-fi vibe to it as well, though.
Yes.
Just, because, I mean, like, as we said, it's not set in the future at all, but there is just, it just feels otherworldly. And the way the high-rise is filmed is kind of like a sort of a giant monolith type thing, almost a spaceship.
Yeah, it's very...
Always blocking out the sun, and it seems so just not of our world that this massive thing can exist.
Yeah, and it at the top it kind of curves.
Yeah, it's got a kind of beak, or like, juts out to the side, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we talked about the collapse of class structure, very heavily a criticism of Thatcher.
Yeah, and most notably
very anti-neoliberalism. But yeah, as we said before, that's not hidden at all. Just to bring up the fact that this is a Ben Wheatley film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really feels like a Ben Wheatley film.
Yeah.
From kind of seeing all these other works, there's just, I think, what you get of a Ben Wheatley film is a sort of dark subject matter and a lot of darkness, yet a line straight through everything of humour. Jet black humour, but still, it's still there. Now, I laughed a lot at this film. It's really quite funny.
Yeah, there's some key moments that I thought, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
There's a bit nearer the end where Lang is meant to be interviewing someone, but because everything's gone to rubbish and ruin, he is still acting like a doctor, but he's doing it all with this massive crayon. Yeah. And it's not even... It's just... He uses it as though it's a pen.
Yeah.
But I just found that really funny.
I remember that scene as well, yeah.
Which also reminded me in Sightseers when she buys the big pencil.
It's
probably...
That, as well, that's another thing. There's moments. Just sort of... everything's slightly off. It's not full on surrealism. It's not full on avant-garde. It's just not our reality. Everything's slightly removed, and like, just think that what characters' interactions with each other don't often make sense. And it's like, why would that character say that? And I think that's entirely his style. As we said earlier, there's a lot of things happen that are not explained. Like, for example, the way it all collapses into this chaos. There's not really a reason.
It just kind of gradually
happens.
Tough.
Yeah.
Because if you look at something like Nightcrawler, which I really love.
Love Nightcrawler, yeah.
Yeah. You can see the sliding scale of that. And there's little... it's like every time when he looks in the mirror, you can see him getting gaunter.
Yeah.
And more skull-like. Whereas in this, because it all seemed to happen at the same time, there were moments of metaphor and showing the collapse of things, like we've discussed. But it didn't seem to happen in a linear way. So it was hard. I found it difficult to...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Kind of go, oh, and now yeah, I see why.
That's happened. It just sort of happens.
Yeah.
But that's a very Ben Wheatley-esque thing. One more thing I think I find quite interesting. It felt so British. There's nothing like, because a lot of British filmmakers, you know, the great ones, I'm not going to name any names, but they often feel more like Hollywoodized, and they're trying to be sort of a British version of an American film kind of thing. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just nice to see a film that feels so of its own kind and is not trying to be anything else. Particularly the kind of the humour and the actors, obviously, but just the way it looks and feels. It's sort of, yeah, very sort of stereotypically British and kind of Python-esque as well at certain times.
Especially when you think about the costume parties that the
bored
wife of the architect has, and the idea that she's dressed up as a little Bo Peep and is on a horse. And it is that, to put in air quotes, British humour.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is great to see, and I did find it really funny.
Yeah.
You're bang on. Yeah. With
it's
that.
Very kind of Terry Gilliam-esque as well. I found the film. Mm. It really reminded me of Brazil a lot of times. I mentioned that. Yeah, the sort of the pythons. So let's talk. Should we talk about the violence in the film?
Yeah.
Because the violence is really quite ever present. Quite visceral, quite punchy, but never sensationalist. It's always absurd.
Yeah.
And almost at times done for laughs, I felt.
Yeah.
So as he's a medical, as it is, he's not a medical, he's a doctor that trains other doctors,
a physician, a physiologist.
That's the one. I can't say that word. But
I struggled.
he's like just sort of doing an autopsy of this man's skull, and the way he peels his skin back was really quite horrible, but kind of funny as well.
It's kind of one of my favourite moments of the film, because he just goes, so the facial mask, I think he even says the word collapses.
Okay.
He might not. But the facial mask collapses and he just pulls it down and then you see this skull.
Slides off. Yeah.
Which was fantastic.
Yeah, which I guess is what the film's doing to society, isn't it? It's pulling the facade back, the skin back, to show you what's really underneath, and getting a hammer and violently opening up what the world actually is like.
Exactly. I loved that as a scene. And also, I just find it really fascinating anyway, that the idea that when you see a skull, you're always repulsed by it, and even though it's what we all are.
Yeah.
And it seems so other.
Definitely, yeah. It's funny, the image of the skull is associated with horror and warning and things like that. Yeah. I think the film's really interesting in a way as well. We talked about these three lead characters there. There's a lot of other characters we'll get to in a second, but each character, each of those three men, they're kind of, it's like a triple header, and you could kind of, there's a kind of Freudian id, ego, super ego thing going on.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Let's explore that some more, Sam. Paging
Dr. Freud.
Yeah.
So you could, like, Wilder is the base, he's primal, he's instinctive, he's the id.
Yeah.
And then Lang is kind of the mediator who sort of has to suppress the id to present himself in society in a respectable way.
Yeah.
And then the superego is what sort of the rules of society and how that is mediated and presented. And that's Royal at the top who sets the rules.
I love that.
What?
That's really brilliant. Oh my goodness.
But then at the end that all collapses.
Yeah.
That this, again, another sort of existing structure in what we just assume is fact is kind of pulled the rug from under.
Yeah. That's such a good way of doing it, especially when you think about later on in the film.
Yeah.
Lang is asked to do an act towards Wilder. That really works.
Definitely.
If he's meant to be the mediator.
Yeah. So we've also got Sienna Miller in the film.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to say she was not the best representation of a female character I've ever seen.
Well, this is one of the main issues I have with the film.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely loved the film, you can probably tell, but just that character, I felt, did we need that? I don't know.
I am constantly disappointed. This isn't an attack at this film in particular, because it happens a lot. But I would like to see a film that tackles the notion that women are objectified without at the same time objectifying women.
I think that the Elizabeth Moss character, who is Wilder's wife, she was fine.
Yeah.
A good character, well-rounded, I thought.
Good name.
Yeah. But just, there's a couple of other characters, in particular some of the women on the top floor.
Yeah.
It was just very seedy, and I think that, I know it's supposed to be seedy, but it didn't that's part of the film, because the film's doing a lot of things I haven't seen done before or done this well before, but that was part I felt I have seen this before.
Well, that's the thing, it's how do you, surely there's another way of showing the seediness without being a bit seedy in how you do it.
Definitely, I think that is slightly problematic.
Yeah.
But I think the...
Been done in a million films. Yeah, so this isn't an attack on that.
Yeah, definitely. I think what it does well is actually the absurdness of the upper class in the film. They're all ridiculous. There's one called Munro in particular who... You want to give him a good slap, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, he's just... And he has this little pencil-thin moustache as well. And I was... Yeah. His fate was deserved.
Yeah. There's also some really good shots of the architect's house, the penthouse, and especially later on in the film when everything's loads of rubbish bags everywhere.
Yeah.
And the rubbish bags look exactly like the cushions on
the
sofa.
Oh, okay. So that's a nice little parallel.
Their sofa cushions are like black leather.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I think sort of aesthetically the film really gets across.
Triumphs.
Yeah, absolutely. The set design, the way everything looks in the building, magnificent. And
it's
perfect. One of my favourite scenes is a scene where Tom Hiddleston is painting.
Yeah.
But painting in the kind of way that you really want to paint. When you're painting a room, you want to go, yeah, let's go for it, and just paint yourself.
Put
it
on your face. Yeah.
So yeah, I really loved that.
And that's so funny as well, because he says, I think I finally found the right shade of grey.
Yeah. Okay. So should we just quickly say general thoughts of them before we get into spoiler territory, as we often do at the end of the show.
Sure.
What's your sort of final thoughts of the film?
I did struggle with it, but that's not to say it's a bad film.
Yeah.
This is a million miles away from a bad film.
Yeah.
Because I find it a little bit difficult to connect with Lang, then, like I said before, that sliding scale was tough. But I would really like to see it again because I think there's so much happening that it would be great to just sort of know the story beforehand and then
definitely.
Go and see it. Also, I should say that I haven't read the book, and the book, it's meant to be a really faithful representation of the book. So you have to bear that in mind. Like, I really enjoyed We Need to Talk About Kevin, and I had read the book beforehand, but I can see if I hadn't, I would have struggled a little bit with that. But it's the set and everything is incredible. The acting's great. It was great to see Rhys Shearsmith in it.
We haven't mentioned him, the dentist.
And I'm a huge fan of Inside Number 9, which he does on the BBC, which goes along the same kind of dark
British surrealism.
So it's brilliant to see him in that, just being fantastic and doing great things with masking tape on his costume. Well worth a watch, and I think it's been handled really well.
Absolutely. I've seen it twice now, and I think it really benefits from a second viewing, because you're going in a second time, you kind of know what you're getting into. You know that it's going to confound you and hit you like a speeding car. It's not going to go into this this world lightly. So it's nice to sort of sit. It's nice when you see it the second time, you kind of sat back and you're kind of more relaxed about what's unfolding in front of you. I've really loved it the second time, actually. I really enjoyed it and just loved how well made it is. It's so
It's really perfect. Well made.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into the ending just very quickly.
Yeah.
I love the ending where how I think the film should end is he sort of calls up next to Sienna Miller, and she says, "Will you talk to someone?" He says, "No, just a building." And it looks at the camera. That should have been it. But there's just this bit where the boy who makes the radio plays like a Thatcher speech.
I really enjoyed that.
Did you?
Yeah.
I thought, oh no, you just missed the mark.
I thought that was on the mark.
I thought it was perfect until that, and I was like, you didn't need a Thatcher speech. We kind of knew that it was set in the 70s, and it was about class, you know, abuse of the class system, and it was absolutely perfect. And I was just like, did I need that? But
I love
it. Doesn't ruin the film by any means at all, but it's just if I were to edit the film, I'd have cut it slightly earlier. Yeah,
I loved the little boy. So the little boy is the one that makes the radio, and he just sort of pops up at these funny moments, and he's kind of always watching
the professor.
Yeah,
they call him. Yeah.
And I found it really funny that this whole time, when everything had been falling to ruin, he had built himself this massive radio tower. Yeah. Like, I loved that. I was really glad to see that. And then I know what you mean, because it's her voice even has been used so often just to talk about these issues.
Yeah, it's just...
But think about it, in 50 years' time...
Yeah. It will be necessary.
Is it going to be so old-hatted to use No, it's not.
I suppose so.
I didn't like how the bubble popped.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the bubble either.
The end is a bubble popping.
That's true, yeah. I'm not sure about that either. It just doesn't fit, I think, slightly.
I think it was quirky. Yeah. I liked that end.
So let's just end now with some popcorn time. This is the last section of the show where we talk about things we've overheard people saying as they've left the cinema. As we mentioned earlier, someone said they didn't really understand how it descended into chaos, and you said it was slightly problematic, but I think that's very intentional.
I
think
agree.
It's part of just Ben Wheatley's style,
and also it's just the idea that you don't need something to happen because it's within all of us.
Exactly, yeah, it's primal,
yeah,
it's built, it's innate,
like a wolf.
And then yeah, I heard someone else mention that who had read the book, that they thought, very faithful adaptation, they said. But mainly things I heard consisted of Tom Hiddleston's naked body.
Yeah. which is in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's not really needed in the film. Like, I'd be saying that if it was a woman, yeah. It's the same. Like, you don't need it in the film.
I also heard someone actually, an interesting point, that said, well, I'm not sure if Tom Hiddleston is Bond after seeing that, because he's currently one of the front runners in the public's eye to take.
He reminded me of James Bond.
And yeah, you said, but I heard someone else say, well, I'm not sure, because I think he's quite a complex character and you don't really expect Bond to be that complex, I suppose. He's not particularly macho in this.
No.
Like, he doesn't really do anything that brave, ultimately.
No,
and he refrains from the action. The action's mainly for Wilder, the wild man. Yeah, I'm not sure if Tom Hiddleston is Bond. Yeah. Especially after this, where he's does such a different performance. But he's a very good actor, so he can do anything.
Yeah, I think he can do it. I believe in you, Tom.
We believe in you, Tom.
Also, I guess this doesn't really count as popcorn time, but the producer who made Crash, not the 2004 version, the 96 version with David Cronenberg...
Absolutely amazing version. I love that film.
Do you? About people who are aroused by car crashes.
Yeah.
Which is also a J.G. Ballard.
Yeah.
It's the same producer.
Jeremy Thomas. Mm. Yeah. And Jeremy Irons was approached to star in Crash.
Was he?
Turned it down.
So that's the... And also, Ballardian is actually a word in the dictionary.
Really?
Yeah. Themes such as dystopian modernity, bleak man-made landscapes, and the psychological effects of technological developments.
That absolutely sums up the film. Yeah.
So in that way, of course, he's been faithful, and it's excellent.
And on that note, pitch-perfect definition of the film there. That's the end of the show. Yeah, really highly... I highly recommend High Rise. I think it is... It's a challenging watch, but a rewarding one, I think. And... support British film.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.